Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, the natural world, and most importantly, some killer tunes. Hey, witches, and thank you so much for joining me today for episode 67 of the podcast, all about the most potent form of magic, music. Now, you might be thinking, but Paige, you literally talk about music all the time. Every episode of this show mentions rock and roll. And you're right. That sounds like me. Today, I'm not only talking about music I like and how it inspires me, but I'm talking magical musical instruments, chakra music, using music for divination, and the number one most witchy song in the history of time, and my personal favorite, I Put a Spell on You. So let's start there. Every time you tune in and you hear the theme music for The Fat Feminist Witch, you are hearing notes from I Put a Spell on You, originally written and released by Screamin' Jay Hawkins in 1956. Aside from, you know, my own theme music, I can damn near guarantee that if you live in a place that celebrates Halloween, you've heard a version of this song on the radio, in commercials, and probably even in a witchy Halloween favorite movie, Hocus Pocus, starring Bette Midler. Amazing. It's the most fantastic and expressive song in the history of rock and roll, and the man who wrote it is an absolute legend. Let's not beat around the bush here, folks. Screamin' Jay Hawkins was one of the greatest singers of all time. Before I Put a Spell on You, Jalacy Hawkins was an average but talented blues singer writing a ballad for his lost love. His voice was silky smooth, and his songwriting was great. But once he started screaming, Jay Hawkins became something almost otherworldly. I Put a Spell on You is loud, slow, and full of guttural screams and moans that could make Marilyn Manson clutch his pearls. I start to sweat every time I hear it. Of course, the song would have been a slow blues ballad, as was his style, if it weren't for a huge order of bourbon and ribs, because there's just nothing like good old-fashioned rock and roll. Not only did this song, born out of longing and alcohol poisoning, change Jay Hawkins, but it changed the history of music, and rock music especially, forever. Not everyone likes the shock rock or the over-theatrical rock and roll, you know, but I personally think that the world is a better place having artists like Alice Cooper and David Bowie and Freddie Mercury of Queen in it. None of them would have put on the types of shows that they did if Screamin' Jay hadn't done it first. To capitalize on the kind of visceral energy of I Put a Spell on You, Screamin' Jay started rising out of a flaming coffin on stage, brandishing bones and skulls, and working old school voodoo all over the stage. He definitely scared white people, and this was totally on purpose. Jay donned these hilarious, stereotypical and kind of cliched witch doctor and voodoo and cannibal type costumes. He jumped and acted like a cannibal or a witch doctor and, you know, used that to milk white people for all they worth because they love a good show, I guess. My favorite album of his actually came out in the 90s. It was kind of a compilation, but it was called Black Music for White People. And every time I think of it, I just die laughing because it's so fantastic. Of course, you know, the white audience were perfectly happy to laugh at his antics on stage or on late night TV. But oddly enough, not oddly, we all know why, his version of the song just didn't receive the awards and the accolades that it really deserved. And actually, the first time this song received an award, it was for a cover by a white artist, of course. Now, when we look back, his performances read as this strong, creative, artistic black man kind of thumbing his nose at white people who wanted to enjoy or even straight up appropriate black culture and music. Elvis. Without confronting its own disturbing role and internal biases in that whole cultural phenomenon. So Jay's version of I Put a Spell on You was the first, but it certainly was not the last. The song has been covered about 100 times since its release, and new versions are still coming out all the time. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix has used 3 different versions throughout the run of the show, and they're all new, and they're all fantastic. Because every single version of this song has got to be the best song on the planet. That's just my opinion. Now, every single version of the song is different. Though the message doesn't always seem obvious in other versions of the song, when Nina Simone covered it, she harnessed that kind of, that strong and very primal energy into this strong black femininity. Her version is incredibly sensual. It's daring, and it became so much a part of Nina's identity that it was the title used for her own autobiography. And when I hear Nina Simone, even other songs besides I Put a Spell on You, I often hear this very spooky, magical, feminine sensuality in the background, just because I'm so familiar with her version of the song. So although the theatrics of Hawkins have never been attempted in the 100 version of the songs, like there's no other version that has the same screaming and moaning and the same outrageous, overwhelming energy of Screamin' Jay's version. Every single version sounds different. And what's great is that they're all very bewitching in their own different ways. The song is just magic that way. The song is so simple and so organic and human that it applies to anyone and can help anyone express their sexuality, longing, vulnerability, creativity, control, or power. When some female singers sing the song, the sensuality and the sexuality of the song says, "You're mine." While many male singers are often really saying, "I'm yours." The song can be flamboyant and erratic, or sultry and smooth. It can even be cheesy and family-friendly, or overtly sexual and even kind of alarming. The song's it's fantastic. It's my favorite. And that's why I chose the music I did for this show, because it speaks to all of us when we hear it. The song is full of longing, of sexuality, of desperation, power, vulnerability, energy, and magic, of course. It's heartbreaking and life-affirming. It's energetic and a little bit exhausting. And every time you hear it, you fall further and further under its spell. And it's so good that you never want to be set free. Some version of I Put a Spell on You finds its way onto every playlist I make to do with witches or magic or Halloween, and every playlist I make to be listened to while working actual magic, as do many other Screamin' Jay hits, since many have these magical rhythms and this same overwhelming like voodoo imagery. In the song Voodoo Priestess, he talks about different cultures and spiritualities like voodoo and the Moonies and metaphysics and the supernatural with a woman before really getting into the song. In She Put the Whammy on Me, this is a song about a bad bitch putting the mojo on Screamin' Jay to make him love her and stay faithful and be obsessed. He wasn't faithful, so if she did it, it didn't work, but she still tried. He also specifically describes her as big multiple times in the song, and I love that. Brujo, which is a song named after the Spanish word for a male sorcerer or magical practitioner, is all about, much like our fave, casting a spell on a woman to make her think of him all the time, for him to always be around when she looks in the mirror, when she, you know, isn't paying attention. Feast of the Mau Mau, super fun song. And there's many versions, but Feast of the Mau Mau reminds me a lot of the Johnny Otis song, Casting My Spell. Oh my God, so fun. And the reason it reminds me so much is that it lists a bunch of really wild ingredients for a magic spell. And it's just very fun to sing along to. But you can't help loving it. You can't help really getting into it. His music is captivating and like enthralling. You can't ignore it. You get lost. You can't help but all of a sudden, you know, find yourself in this, you know, magically spooky swamp or the home of a brujo or a priestess about to make some magic. He also covered a few Tom Waits songs, and legit, they were so good. I would sell my soul to bring Jay back from the dead just to have him and Tom Waits make a single album together. Like, they have such good complimentary vibes going on. Now, if you want to check out some of his more magical tracks, I've actually got a playlist called Screamin' Jay's Voodoo that I'll link to in the description that's on Spotify. I didn't actually aim for this specifically, but it's got 13 songs that all have a connection to magic and mystery and mojo. And once you listen to it, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about, the overall strong magical vibe that Screamin' Jay had in all of his tracks. Wild, screaming rock and roll or blues or jazz may not be your style when you're getting down to witchcraft. That's okay. I won't take it personally. Just like how all of our practices are different, the energy that we raise and call on is very different in our spiritual moments. Now, when people think religious or spiritual music, they might think of gospel or even, you know, Stevie Nicks, if you're really cheesy like I am. Or instrumental tracks featuring instruments like drums, flutes, bells, and singing bowls. In Wiccan practice, the bell is a standard part of the witch's altar. It's used to open and close a magical circle or create sacred space. It can call in deities or spirits and be used to infuse energy into an object to create like a talisman. It also functions as a symbol of lunar magic and, quote-unquote, the goddess. My own altar bell features a triple moon carved into the body and a crescent moon at the end of the handle. It's got a loud and kind of like crystal clear tone that seems to wipe my mind clean. Despite not being a Wiccan and loving to use like playlists of regular music while meditating or making magic, I often use my bell to help me focus and to clear energy in the room, and I have used it to infuse objects with magical energy. Now I'm going to ring my bell and I'm going to try to make sure that it is not too loud. If you are wearing headphones, just a heads up. Nice, right? Actually, it was cool. Not to bring up Sabrina again, but in the very first season, I think it might have been the very first episode, she uses a bell in the woods and it's the exact same one. But her tone is a little different than mine, which is interesting. So it's pretty common to use water or smoke to clear a space of energy or to clear your aura or personal field of energy. But music and sound are just as effective. Much like smoke and water, sound waves can reach places that we just can't. It can bounce around corners and through stairwells. It can reverb through walls, go under furniture, and push all of that energy you don't want hanging around right out the windows and doors and air vents. It's natural. It's beautiful. We all love it. And unless you're working with bird calls, which would also be awesome, it is a decidedly human type of energy. Though many animals make sounds, we hear as musical, and birds really do make songs. They create specific songs for themselves and for their mates. To our knowledge, most animals don't really possess the ability to really jam out or follow music. Birds seem to be the best at it, which is no surprise, and some have even showed that they're not just like mimicking a voice on the record, but getting into the beat or the rhythm of the song. But many animals react to music in their own way. My bunny, Jimmy Hoppe, he was a fellow fan of one of my favorite singers, Al Green. And I think it's because Al Green, it's very smooth music with a really nice bass. And I played it on a record, so you could really feel it on the floor. He would sit in front of it, and it would always chill him out. It also, you know, it puts me in a really good mood because it's some of my favorite. And I think he would pick up on that emotional, that good emotional vibe I'm getting from the music. My cat, Clover, gets super lovey-dovey and really cute. Whenever I play anything by Solange Knowles, he loves Solange. Like, he loves her so much, and he will actually kind of protest if I turn it off while he's chilling. Like, if I turn it off and he's, you know, sitting on the couch with his eyes closed, just looking like he's sitting in a sunbeam even on a rainy day, if I change the song or put on something different, his eyes come right open and he meows and he'll come right up to me like, what are you doing? That's my jam. It just makes me laugh. I love that. And a pet rat that I had in high school, I love pets, loved coming with me to guitar lessons. She would sit on my shoulder or even on the body of the guitar and just really enjoy the vibrations of the music. And that was just so, so cool. It's interesting to see how animals react to music and to sound, even though we don't see them as being able to hear or feel music in the same way we do. there's another aspect of music and of sound that affects us, and that's, you know, the vibes. Vibrations are something that we can physically feel in so many different parts of our bodies. You know, some vibrations feel so great, while others make us feel afraid or unstable or just irritated. Vibration is what makes sound enter our brains in the first place. The sound waves cause a vibration in our eardrums, which carry the sound to our inner ear, and our inner ear actually translates these air-based vibrations into like water or liquid-based vibrations, which we can then, you know, translate in our brains. How interesting is that? And it's even much more complicated. I'm not an ear specialist, but the way we take in sound through our ears and our eardrums is actually like a very complicated and interesting process. Now, in metaphysical terms, vibrations can be felt in places like our aura and our chakras. Each chakra resonates with a different note on the musical scale from C down at the root to B up at our crown. Now, I say resonate a lot, and let's explain that a little bit. So resonance describes when two objects that are tuned to the same frequency react to the vibration of the other. So for example, if you and a friend are each holding an acoustic guitar that is tuned the same and you're sitting in the same room, one of you plays, you know, a nice big C note. Wow. Now that same string on the other guitar will start to vibrate. You may even hear the note coming from your guitar as well. And it's because they're tuned to the same frequency, and so they're reacting to that same vibration. It's also why the heartbeats of people in crowds or auditoriums can all sync together. Isn't that really cool? So the frequency of the C note has the same frequency as our root chakra. And when that note is played around you, you hear it, your chakra responds. In this way, you can tune your chakras to the correct frequency by playing these notes, and this will balance them or have them working in harmony. Pun intended. Now, you can get really meta with it and bypass the musical note and go straight to interacting with the frequencies using a type of sound I guess it's music. It's called binaural beats. But I guess I'm a little too old school and I can't really get into it. I'm not big into electronic music. I respect it, but it's not my vibe. I really like kind of the whole musical experience. I like being able to hear multiple instruments and I very much like vocals. So you can get tools like a pitch pipe, which is how we used to tune our voices in vocal classes, or tuning forks. Tuning forks are so neat and they're very, very popular right now. So each tuning fork, you need a fork for each note. It resonates with a certain frequency and therefore the note. And you get this really beautiful reverb because tuning forks are made from steel. Sound healing and chakra balancing with tuning forks can be found in person through a lot of spiritual healers, maybe even Reiki practitioners, or you can even find videos and meditations on YouTube or your meditation apps that utilize that sound and vibration from the tuning fork to align and tune individual chakras. Like I said, I prefer to work with actual musical notes, but listening to, you know, the musical scale isn't exactly riveting stuff, so I like to put together songs that are written and played in that particular key. So for the root, I like to listen to songs in the key of C, like Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley. Even emotionally, that song really hits all the right notes for my root chakra. It's sad, but it's beautiful, it's deep, it's personal, it's a little bit primal, and it's kind of overwhelmingly sexual, more so than the original by Leonard Cohen. Jeff Buckley kind of cut out some of the middle parts and really brought together the parts that were kind of overtly sexual. And that is a very good root chakra vibe. I've got a playlist for you. Yeah, I made two playlists for this episode. So I made up a playlist that plays three songs in the correct key for each chakra, going from root to crown, called Chakra Keys. And again, I'll link it in the description. Now, I don't want to tell you every single song on it because I'm afraid you'll bail entirely because I had a little bit of fun with it. But I'm going to give you a little taste of the playlist. So we have Hallelujah for the root. We have Royals by Lord for the sacral chakra. Yellow Ledbetter by Pearl Jam for the solar plexus because I am a ham. Oh, that reminds me. So the sacral chakra, Royals by Lord, this is in the key of D. Yellow Ledbetter is in the key of E. Smooth Operator by Sade is our song for the heart, and this is in the key of F. Dirty Old Town by the Pogues is for the throat. It's the key of G. And that song, it's very throaty. I don't know if you'll like it, but it's you'll see why I chose it when you listen. Wagon Wheel by Old Crow Medicine Show is our song for the third eye, and that is in the key of A. And The Crown is in the key of B. And straight up, I'm going to tell you right now, songs in B major are weird as hell. So in addition to a Backstreet Boys song that I know you will not be able to resist singing along with, we have Rasputin by Boney M for the crown chakra. How fun is that, right? Oh, that's wild. Oh, you're going to really love it. We talk a lot about mental health here on the show, and I guess more specifically, the barriers that I came up against when I was seeking out treatment for my mental illness. I've also been very fortunate to share the strides that I've made since then and the support that I was able to find. Sharing that with you showed me just how important it is to be able to talk about what you're going through and to get support from someone or many someones who care. That's why I'm proud to have BetterHelp as one of the sponsors of the show. BetterHelp is an online service that can connect you with real licensed therapists who can be available to talk on your schedule and right where you are. They have four different ways to communicate: text, chat, phone, and video calls. And there are professionals with a wide range of specialties. So there's a really good chance that you can find someone who's perfect for you, all without having to leave home. Everything's confidential. If you ever feel like your counselor is just not the right fit for you, you can switch right away. There's no charge. The service is very affordable compared to in-person therapy, and they even offer financial aid for those who need it. It's okay to need help sometimes. You deserve to get better, and you can start that journey at betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch to save 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. What if soldiers in the United States Army were actually witches? Well, in Motherland Fort Salem, that's exactly the way it is. In a witch army, the women are the ones with the power. Motherland Fort Salem is the new original TV series on Freeform from the creator of Claws and executive producers of Succession. Over 300 years ago, witches made a deal to end their persecution. In exchange for their freedom, they would become the country's front line of defense. Motherland Fort Salem takes place in modern-day America. Follow three new cadets as they turn their immense power into weapons, from basic training to learning how to bring the full fury and destruction of an actual tornado against the enemy. And there is one hell of an enemy. A chilling terrorist group known as the Spree have begun to tear the country and the world apart. And these women are our only hope. They were born witches. They will be made warriors. Motherland Fort Salem premieres Wednesday, March 18th on Freeform. A pretty popular type of magical musical instrument is the standing bell or the singing bowl. Now, you've no doubt heard these referred to as Tibetan singing bowls. But I have recently learned through an article by an actual Tibetan person that, you know, this is not truth. It's just not true. They are not Tibetan. And I feel so silly. I never questioned the validity of the, like, Tibetan origins of the singing bowls myself. I feel a little bit weird about it because, of course, they're not Tibetan. One of the most popular ways to use these bowls is by getting ones for each of the notes for each of your chakras, right? So you can get seven bowls, each in the note for each chakra. And chakras aren't Tibetan. The particular musical scale I'm using isn't Tibetan. And the bowls themselves are not Tibetan. They're Indian or Nepalese. And the design, I mean, those weren't bells. Those were food bowls. It sounds so stupid now. This really is just another example of white New Age spirituality fetishizing and you know, cannibalizing what they like from Eastern practices. Though saying Eastern practices is also a little misleading, because most of these practices that white people are calling Eastern are actually Western and created by white North Americans. It's gross. Now, all of that being said, singing bowls are a bell, a beautiful bell, and a musical instrument with the really, really interesting sound that reverbs all through the body. There are two ways of playing these bowls. The first is to strike it like a bell and get a singular, clear tone. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. Now, the second way is to roll the hammer along the outside of the bell, which kind of coaxes that tone out of the bowl very, very slowly. Every single time I've been in a room where someone is playing the bowl in that second way, I feel it before I hear it. In that way, that the reverberations are really the star of the show, and I can see and feel how sounds can affect us physically. It's so interesting because the musical notes react, you feel them in your body in different parts. So the bowls that are associated with the lower chakras, you know, the C note bowls for the root, I really felt that low in my spine and, you know, a little bit in the genitals. And then some of the higher notes, you know, the B's and the A's, I really felt those when people were playing them in my head, the back of my neck, all of those places associated with our higher chakras. How interesting is that, right? Music is so neat. So singing bowls are not Tibetan, but they are still really beautiful bells with tones and notes that can lend some really, really cool energy to your magic. If you go into a shop and ask for them, though, the salespeople will refer to them as Tibetan and may have some weird, totally fake, made-up historical tale about Tibetan singing bowls. Just pay your money and bounce, or give them a heads up, honestly. Hopefully this myth will begin to fade away now that actual people from Tibet are setting the record straight, and we can just enjoy singing bowls as the bells that they are, the beautiful musical instruments. Now, if you want to learn a little bit more about that, I will definitely put the link in the article to the article from The Star in the description here for the podcast, so you can familiarize yourself with this white nonsense. Actually, that article that I read was kind of the inspiration behind this entire episode. I read it and I got to thinking about it and got to thinking about how we don't really ask questions. You know, we see this what white people would consider Asian artwork or characters on a bowl, and we're like, yep, that's Tibetan, totally cool. And I wasn't totally shocked to find out the bells are not Tibetan, but at the same time, I was like, how come I never questioned this before? How did this become so pervasive? How do none of us kind of realize it? It really got me thinking about music and its place in spirituality, in my own practice, and in kind of the wider New Age and magical community. So I highly recommend reading it. It's very good and it's pretty funny. They're a very good writer, whoever wrote this. I can't pronounce their name, so I'm not going to. It is on the article. But they're funny. They're a great writer. I hope they write more things. A really fun way to work magic with music is through shufflemancy or music divination. Now, shufflemancy is kind of a fun and like kitschy term for using a shuffle or randomization type feature to answer questions and give yourself readings, just like tarot cards. This can be done with an old radio with a knob or dial, which is very fun and retro. And, you know, you can't know what's going to be playing on the radio ever. You have no idea. Especially if you don't recognize the station, you might have no idea what's playing. So that's pretty interesting. Or a program like Spotify or iTunes, whatever it is that you use, where you've got large playlists or access to a very large catalog of music. At its core, the practice is very super simple. You get yourself a notepad and a pen, you know, or whatever, the notes app on your phone, and your musical source, and you sit in a quiet room. You don't want other sounds, especially, distracting you. Much like when you're getting ready for a tarot reading or any sort of divination activity, you want to make sure that you are in the zone, that you are quiet, that you're not going to be distracted, and that you can really tune in to whatever tool you're using. So you get into your frame of mind, you ask your question, and you beseech the muses for guidance and hit shuffle. Play the first thing that comes up. Now, you can actually read what comes on any way you like. Maybe the song itself means something to you. It played during a certain event, or it always makes you feel a certain way. Maybe it makes pictures form in your head. You know, are you writing that music video as you listen to the song? The lyrics could have answers. You may have to look up the lyrics a little further, or maybe it's something you know. Maybe you can hear keywords. The notes being played and the key the song is in, now you know, can resonate with certain parts of your body and certain parts of your metaphysical body. You could get a message that is very easy to decipher. It could be a song that you know, you've heard it a million times, you know every single word, you know every single note, and just like that, you're like, oh, I know what this means. You could also get something that requires some research. It might be a song you've never, ever heard. That's always very interesting because you're going to get this message in a way that's totally new, right? The nature of the song could also lend you a clue. So if you ask a question about a relationship and you get a wicked breakup song, like something like Cry Me a River by Justin Timberlake, so not a good sign for you, not a good sign. But then if you ask about a promotion or a pay raise and you get something like Money by Pink Floyd or Juicy by Biggie, I'd say that you can expect to have some money or to be ballin' in the future. Awesome. I really like Cream by Wu-Tang Clan, so like cash rules everything around me. When that comes up when I'm doing money magic or something, I'm like, hell yeah! So great. You can also personalize it a little bit further by making a big playlist of every love song, good or bad, that you know, and use that for love divination. And you can do that, you know, so on and so forth for every topic if you want. I have a card deck called the Music Oracles deck, and each card features a different musician. The cards all have little sayings or advice based on the character of the person on the card. So it's not a direct quote, but it's really based on their vibe. And that can help. But I also like to then listen to a few songs by the artist to kind of clarify some meaning or look to their life story for guidance. So for example, there is an Amy Winehouse card. I am an Amy Winehouse super fan. I love her. But her very short life was sad, deep, emotional, chaotic, and just littered with overindulgence in all the wrong things. You know, the wrong drugs, the wrong drinks, the wrong dudes. Love was all encompassing for her. It was life and death. She put her full heart and soul into every relationship and then poured it out in the songs that she wrote about it. In a love reading, getting Amy's card can be a sign that you need to be more vulnerable and open up, but without losing yourself. You know, it's time to enforce your boundaries, but allow yourself to actually feel love to the fullest. That very scary and intense feeling is part of the kind of whole love experience, right? Interesting. It can also be a bad sign, you know what I mean? Like, yikes, some of her relationships were not so great. So if you get it in a spot where it's like, you know, what is the future of our relationship? And you get Amy Winehouse, maybe that's not so cool. It's really up to you to decipher the cards. But it's a really cool deck, and I like to use it along with tarot cards or first thing in the morning to kind of help me set the tone for the rest of my day. I have even like used the cards to make playlists. I intuitively choose cards, and then I put together some of my favorite songs from each one of the artists into one list, and I listen to it for, you know, the answers or to help me accomplish the things I need to that day. It's really effective, and it can also be incredibly interesting and fun. You can find new things that you've never heard of. Not every artist in the deck is a modern popular artist. You know, we've got classical artists, there's rock and roll, there's pop, there's quote unquote world music from all over. So it is a really, really neat deck, and it's been really fun to read with and to work with. So I hope what you come away with from this episode is that music, no matter your level of interest in it, can be a powerful magical tool that you can incorporate into your practice in a variety of ways. Music tells stories, it elicits deep emotions, and even resonates with our physical and metaphysical bodies. It's a tool for communicating with one another on a universal and soul level, a cellular level. Oh, why is that stuck in my head? It really is the oldest form of magic that we humans ever created. and we continue to share, create, and recreate it every single day in an effort to share our deepest selves with others and with the universe. Thank you so much for joining me today, witches, and listening to me ramble on about my BFF rock and roll. It really did save my soul. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more about me or about the show, you can do that by visiting my website at thefatfeministwitch.com and searching The Fat Feminist Witch all across social media. If you check out any of the playlists that I've mentioned today, you can absolutely tag me and let me know what you think. Did you know that my very first book, Green Witchcraft, was just released on February 25th? That was Tuesday. Also, Fat Tuesday / Mardi Gras. This practical guide to discovering the magic of plants, herbs, crystals, and beyond can help you create a relationship with the earth, no matter which part of it you happen to be standing on at the time. And you can learn to work natural magic into your practice. You can get it now in paperback or ebook form from any of your favorite book retailers online. And of course, I would love it if you would request it at your local witchy shops so it is available that way. Want to support the podcast? You can do that by going to my website, thefatfeministwitch.com, and clicking the button that says Buy Me a Coffee to make a one-time donation. You can also join my private Patreon group for $10 a month by going to patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. And you can advertise here on the show. So you can check out prices and plans at advertisecast.com/thefatfeministwitch. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody. Saturday is the leap day. It's February 29th. And this day only shows up on our calendars but once every 4 years. So I will be putting up your tarot scopes for March on that day using the Miss Cleo Tarot Power Deck and the Music Oracles Deck to help you work some magic for the month ahead. So I hope you check that out. Enjoy the rest of your February, witches. We are coming into March and the beginning of spring is only a few weeks away. I can't wait.